This is the Jeff Merrick Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
And that music means it's time for Greg Wyshynski from ESPN, ESPN.com, and The Drop. And today we're talking about the NHL Players Association player poll. Hello, Wish.
Hello, hello. There's a lot to talk about beyond that, but we can start there, I suppose.
Oof, no. We're going to get there. In the meantime, we have a lot before then. I don't know. I'm going to put this out like it's a buffet. We can do, and I know I keep saying, man, we've talked a lot about the Flyers and John Tortorella, but that's on offer. The Islanders and the Rangers from last night is on offer.
Let's talk about the player poll. Like,
go ahead.
First of all, let's on the Torts thing. Torts is signed for 2 more years at $4 million per. Like, I know that in theory, he's a desirable coach that could maybe find a new home pretty quickly, and you'll be off the hook for that. But the bottom line is that, you know, you may have to pay a guy to not coach your team for 2 years and $8 million, and what's the sense of that? But that being said, I mean, like, it's been a disaster down the stretch. All they've accomplished is completely screwing their draft lottery odds if they don't make the playoffs. And if you heard him last night, he was clearly a man who has resigned himself to the fact that they're not going to rally for a spot, and was doing everything he could to manage the emotions of some of the younger players that are on the roster. And and so, I mean, they're in a bit of a pickle because they're never going to be as bad as they want to be if he's the coach. But, I mean, that's your lot right now. You sign the guy for 4 years. He's in year two.
The other thing is, I mean, he sounded this way after Saturday's game against Columbus as well. Like, they got pasted by the Columbus Blue Jackets on Saturday. They got destroyed by the Montreal Canadiens last night. And afterwards, this wasn't the, it's good that we're going through this. Everything is a test and we're learning about these players and this is important information. No, it was all about, we got to stay positive here, guys. We got to stay. Hey. It's a different sounding John Tortorella that we're seeing now. And listen, I get that there's an element of exhaustion, but I think the element of exhaustion isn't just like the players are physically exhausted. Like Tortorella's mentioned that Sammy Ersson is just physically exhausted. He's ushered into duty and a number of games and a volume of work that he didn't anticipate at the beginning of the season. I get that, but I think these guys too are, I don't want to say like emotionally exhausted, but like every day is a soap opera in Philly.
Well, it's,
I know,
well,
I'm guilty,
it's like,
of, you know, throwing logs on the fire, but that's what it's been all year.
At some point, the horse ain't running for you. He's tried everything he possibly can to motivate this team to finish in a playoff spot, benching, you know, scratching Couturier, doing all these things, you know, having these dramatic press conferences. Like, he's done everything he can out of his bag of tricks to try to see this thing through, and it didn't work. So, I don't know. Like, again, the finish of this season leaves such a sour taste in your mouth that you think that maybe he's vulnerable. But at the end of the day, like, again, he signed for 2 more years. He's Torts. Let me ask you another coaching question, though. I'm feeling really feisty today, and I figure you're the guy to help scratch this itch. So Andy Strickland had Joel Quenneville on his podcast. I haven't heard the interview yet, I should say, in full disclosure. And I know you know Strick. He's been on the show, I'm sure, before. Strick's podcast has a funny way of trying to do some reputation mending. He's had Eustace King on during the heights of the controversy with the Bruins. He had Babcock on. He's had Tim Peel on. And then he has this Quenneville thing. Do you think there's a possibility, as long as there's active litigation against the Blackhawks, that Joel Quenneville is coaching in this league? Because this is obviously another step towards the reputation mending of Joel Quenneville. You do?
I do. I think that... like, I don't want to say it's getting to a point where if you're Joel Quenneville, you turn around and say, like, look, like, if I'm not reinstated, I sue. Like, I don't think we're there, because I know all the people have wondered about that, but I don't think we're there. But I do think that I do wonder about the element of, like, when I first heard that Quenneville was going to be on with Strick, my first thought was, is this a trial balloon?
Of course it is.
To see how it's received. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, first of all, great get for that podcast. Great get for Andy. Like, that's fantastic. My first thought was, how much of this is a trial balloon? Because you always wonder about, okay, when is it? Not that he would need the NHL's blessing to do so, but I don't think that Joel Quenneville does that interview if he thinks that it's going to harm his chances of getting back to the NHL. Do you agree with that?
It's completely a trial balloon, and it's calculated. It's not only calculated because it's a podcast that in the past has offered a platform to people that need to fix their reputation, but it's calculated in the fact that it's a St. Louis podcast. I read the comments on the on one of the tweets that accompanied the interview, and it was a bunch of Blues fans begging for Quenneville to come back to St. Louis. Very friendly audience for Joel Quenneville to do a podcast in St. Louis because he is a beloved figure there, and they would take him back with that franchise in a millisecond, probably.
Mm-hmm. I think that there's, and not to just completely like, turn away from the Quenneville question here, but I think there's a lot of teams that are going to go through questions about their coach and where they go next. Like we just mentioned Tortorella, the Buffalo Sabres got eliminated yesterday. The New Jersey Devils got eliminated yesterday. There's a coaching decision there. St. Louis with Drew Bannister there on an interim capacity, and we'll see what happens in the playoffs and how many teams decide to do something with their bench boss there. Like it's been a really volatile season for coaches, and I don't think that it's over. I really don't for one second think that any of this is over. So I think that it's the beginning of the conversation of Joel Quenneville returning somewhere, maybe a chumming of the waters, I suppose. But I think we're probably at the point now where, again, he still needs to be reinstated by the NHL.
That's the thing.
And so as of right now, he can't coach because he hasn't been reinstated, but it feels very much like we're getting to the point where, like, listen, I'll tell you, I thought it would have been sometime last summer too, where Joel Quenneville was, started to do this, make more public appearances and put himself out there more. But then again, this is just my feeling, but I feel that Babcock going nuclear ruined it for Joel Quenneville's chances last year. Because everyone was like, hold on a second. No, we're not having Joel Quenneville part of this conversation after what just happened with Babcock in Columbus.
I think you got your timing wrong on that, because there was definitely, even like when the Rangers were losing to the Devils in that playoff series, like you couldn't go anywhere without somebody speculating that Quenneville was going to be the next coach of the Rangers. It ended up being Laviolette.
I meant Quenneville being more of a public person.
Oh, you just mean making the rounds.
His name out there.
Okay.
I'm just talking about Joel Quenneville is there. I'm not saying no one was hiring him, but all of a sudden, because listen, Joel Quenneville has been underground, right? There've been conversations about Joel Quenneville. Joel Quenneville has not commented. Joel Quenneville has not done interviews, until this podcast.
We actually talked about Quenneville. I remember it because I remember I was sitting in a parking lot at the time. We talked about Quenneville last year. It was after the Dubas stuff went down with Toronto. And we were talking about the fact that he has tried to do work behind the scenes, whether it's, attending education classes or volunteer, who knows. He's been trying to do stuff behind the scenes to kind of rebuild his reputation. And all that stuff maybe came out in the interview. I don't know. Maybe he's saving it for his first press conference someplace. But he's been putting in the work. I know what you're saying, and I think that this is an important step for him going forward to trying to find a gig, because there's going to be a bunch open. I mean, you could easily see him landing in Jersey. Like that's a team that's ripe for somebody like that to come in, if it isn't a situation where Tommy Fitzgerald decides to hire his friend full time in Travis Green. But like I still come back to the idea that Bettman has to clear the guy, and the Chicago Blackhawks are still facing active litigation from one of the Black Aces. And so can you square that? Can you bring this guy back in the league when the chapter in Chicago still isn't closed? I don't know.
It's a great question. It is. I don't want to be frivolous and just come up with something just to make sounds on a radio show. I really don't know. I don't know what the answer to that one is.
Well, I mean, why should today be different than any other day?
That's fair enough. Speaking of coaching, I know we talked last week about the Buffalo Sabres, but now that they're officially eliminated, are we talking about the Buffalo Sabres again, Wish?
We might as well. Again, I think it's time. We all love Don Granato. We all love him big time. But if ever there was a team that was at that moment of sort of like bringing in someone who's going to get a little bit more out of them, that maybe has a bit more Stanley Cup playoff experience and that sort of thing, like now would be the time. Maybe again, for me, we talked about this last week, but the biggest thing for me is like bringing in someone who's going to offer them a little bit more defensive structure. I know their defensive metrics have been better as the season's gone on, but I still want somebody who's going to be able to really whip them into shape to that end, and especially in front of that young goaltending. So we'll see where they go. I don't have a name for you. I don't know where they go. I mean, like you have guys like Todd McClellan out there, for example, that could be interesting. But yeah, I think a change needs to happen there.
I still wonder, and they brought him up for a couple of games this year to coach when Granato had to step away. They didn't have to do that. I still wonder about Seth Appert.
Yeah.
Who's the coach of the Rochester Americans. Now, it would be a new NHL name. I think in that scenario, I think you probably surround him with veteran assistants. You know? Like, could you see Seth Appert with Jeff Blashill as an assistant? Like, they're close.
Yeah.
Could you see that?
I could
see that.
But do you need somebody who's more of an authoritative hear me now as I know the way through the playoffs kind of guy? You know, well, it'd be fun there, but see, you can't do it because he was already there with Bylsma. But you can't go back to that well.
Oh, I don't know. Listen, do you go back to the Lindy Ruff well?
Well, that's the one that everybody in Buffalo talks about is Lindy Ruff. And I be honest with you, it's not the worst idea in the world. Look what he did with a young team in New Jersey. Granted, he's kind of in the same boat as Granato, where the Devils were like the teacher has to become the professor at some point. But damn, if like you're looking for an old hand and you're looking for somebody who knows the market and you're comfortable with, I mean, Lindy Ruff's not the worst of the options that are out there.
Let me circle around back to Seth Appert here for one quick second, one more time. Does he have that I can shepherd you through this regular season and into the playoffs because I have this experience? No, he can't do that. But the one thing that he does offer, which if I'm the Buffalo Sabres and I'm making a move on Granato, I do find attractive is, you know, they talk about all, you know, the great, like J.J. Paterka's had a great season for this team. You look at other players, Jack Quinn, for example, Matias Samuelson. Like, look at the roster and look at how many players went through Rochester to get to the Buffalo Sabres and were already coached by Seth Appert.
Yeah.
It's not as if he's coming into a room and he doesn't know anybody.
Right.
I don't know, man. Like, that's the one that I keep circling. And look where he's got the Rochester. Like, Rochester Americans, last time I checked, like 2 points out of first in their division. Like, they've had a really nice run here. So, they had a great run in the playoffs last year. Probably have another great one this year. It's done a really good job.
So as much as I like the veteran coach leading the young team thing, you've scratched another itch for me, which is the AHL coach that knows all the young players comes up to coach them in the NHL. I find that to be a very successful formula. And the thing that I always harken back to is the Bruce Boudreau thing in Washington. And maybe to a lesser extent, or maybe the same extent, the Bruce Cassidy thing in Boston, where you got these guys that come up that know the young players and there's all kinds of, you know, there's all kinds of stuff. Yeah, it's great. I mean, I can see a path there.
Spencer Carberry in Washington now.
Yeah.
You know, he didn't coach
anybody in Washington, you want to have the faith of those young players. And I think by having somebody that they're familiar with, that they know is confident in them, I mean, that's not the worst idea in the world.
Okay. Let's do players play. Anything else from last night you want to pull out of it? I don't know. Here's one for you. I know you love stuff like this. How is Austin Matthews on the bench in an empty net situation against the Devils?
Maybe they heard the criticism of how many empty net assists Kucherov has this year and didn't want him to suffer the same slings and arrows. I saw a tweet from somebody, I forget who it was, where they did the Art Ross race if you took out empty net points between Kucherov and MacKinnon.
Yeah.
And I swear to God, like, I had a Pavlovian response to seeing that again, because it reminded me of the Ovechkin BS early in his career, where it's like, well, how many goals would he have if he didn't have those empty netters? And I'm like, show me something they never said about Gretzky. and I will tell you, I will show you that it is the empty net goal excuse. It was at the height of the Crosby Ovechkin wars. It was when everybody in Canada was trying to find a reason to bemoan the success of the Russian guy. And they bought up empty net goals. And I felt the same way last night, being like, well, if you take out Kucherov's empty net assist, like, shut up. What are you talking about? It just shows he's valuable to be on the ice at that point.
Well, if you take away the secondary assist or the frivolous
assist,
Trophy look at? No, but you know what? The thing about Gretzky with empty, like, wish he set records with empty net goals. Like, there are milestones that were hit on empty net goals by Wayne Gretzky, and I can tell you, as someone who was right there for it, we all went along for the ride.
I had to have this argument a billion times with people about Ovechkin, the idea that he is on the ice because he's good at it, and also because, despite what everybody used to say about the guy, he's not as much of a liability to the point where you feel terrible keeping him out there in a 6-on-5 situation. It's the same thing as Kucherov. I don't know, man. I saw that last night with the Kucherov McKinnon thing. I'm just like, oh God, this again? With the Russian guy again? Are we doing this again?
Okay, players poll. What grabbed you out of all these things? Like, there's a lot that aren't really surprising. You know, if you needed one player to win one game, who would you want? Overwhelmingly, it's Connor McDavid at 48%, Sidney Crosby at 11%. If you needed to win one game, who's a defenseman you want on your team? Kale McCarr, 56, like, overwhelming winner. Victor Hedman in a 10. Quinn Hughes doesn't come in till 4. Roman Josi ahead of him at 4.52. Anything stand out from this year's edition of the NHLPA Players Poll?
There are two. One is funny and one's really insightful. The funny one is the one that said, which player is the most difficult player to face in their own end? And Victor Hedman won that race with just over 20% of the vote.
20%.
And that makes sense. He's a tremendously good defenseman and a big man at that, and you wouldn't want to face him in his own end. Number two on the list was Connor McDavid with almost 10% of the vote. And it made me wonder how NHL players were interpreting this question. Because if you say Hedman's own end, well, you know where that is. That's the defensive end of the ice. Is it possible they misinterpreted the question and said that in Connor McDavid's own end, which is obviously the offensive end, he's the toughest to defend?
Offensive zone.
Right? It's got to be, because it's not as if, like, if you're telling me that Connor McDavid is better in his own end than Jacob Slavin and Anze Kopitar, I have a feeling that maybe there was some reading comprehension issues with this question, wouldn't you?
Well, yes, and now that you mention it, you know what I'd like to see from the NHL players poll? I'd like to see them divide it more.
How
I'd
so?
Like to see them fragment it a little more. Well, okay. I'd like to see, okay, here are a bunch of questions for defensemen. Here are a bunch of questions for forwards. And here are a bunch of questions for goaltenders.
Okay.
Instead of just making it one big, huge jambalaya. I want to have it fragmented a little bit here. That's what I would like to see. We've done these players' polls enough now that now I think it's time to fragment. Agree or disagree?
I think that'd be great. And try to make it more specialized, have the defensemen tell us what's up, have the forwards tell us what's up, have the goalies tell us what's up. Yeah, I completely agree. The other one that I really liked was the toughest arena to play in. Obviously, T-Mobile wins because...
Vegas!
Yeah, I mean, I thought that was obvious. Like, not only the spectacle there, not only the intensity of the fans, but, you know, Vegas flu and all that. The shocker for me, though, was Pete. Go ahead.
I was going to say, one of the things that I always wondered if Vegas would do, to the point about, rough legs the next day, it's Vegas after all. I thought that one of the things that Vegas, and maybe they tried this, I don't know. One of the things that I figured Vegas might want to look at doing to give themselves a tactical advantage is Sunday afternoon games.
Yeah.
We want Sunday afternoon games.
Oh, that's cruel.
Visiting team rolls in on Saturday. We're not playing Saturday night. We're playing Sunday afternoon.
Yeah. All the Vegas players are snug as a bug in their little mansion beds in Summerlin. They come rolling in. Everybody on the other side hasn't showered. Yes. Yeah. I like it.
Yep. That's amazing.
But I was going to say, PNC Arena in Raleigh was number two on this list, which I thought was really insightful. I mean, anyone who's been there to watch a game understands the volume of that place, understands how raucous the fans are. But to have that acknowledged, to finish higher than TD Garden, to finish higher than the Avalanche's place.
Bell Center.
Really impressive.
Ball Arena.
I thought that was really cool for PNC. I think those fans take a lot of pride in making that place really hard to play in. And that's cool. The other interesting one too, speaking of T-Mobile in Vegas, Merrick, did you see which arena has the best ice? And T-Mobile Arena was fifth
I know.
On that list?
I haven't heard that. I haven't heard that one. Like we've all heard Edmonton for the longest time. Edmonton comes in at
Bell
number
Center
two
too.
On that one. And Bell Center, right? Like it's the northern climes where you're going to find the wonderful ice. But I had not heard that about T-Mobile Arena. So Bell Center came in at number one, 34%. Rogers Place in Edmonton, 14.52%. Canada Life Center in Winnipeg, 11.07%. XL Energy Center in Minnesota, St. Paul, Minnesota, understand that, 9.8%. And then to Greg's point, 5% T-Mobile Arena. Yeah. That one was a stunner.
That's a
because
stunner,
honestly,
right?
Greg, and this is the arrogance of me. I thought for this one, Canada was going to run the table. There's five Canadian ranks.
I think that would be fine. You guys, you're cold and know how to make ice. The interesting thing about T-Mobile is this. Now, obviously, like we've both been in Florida for games, and we know how incredibly bad the ice can be during the playoffs because they keep opening and closing the doors in Tampa, and there's like thunderstorms outside. Do you think the dry heat? Do you think it's humidity that's the issue for ice and the dry heat is not as impactful in Las Vegas than, say, like the heat and humidity in a place like Florida? I don't know. I'm not a climatologist, really, Merrick.
Nor am I. Listen, I always mention, like, during lockouts, I pretend that I'm an actuary and understand everything about pensions and come ask me. Like, I'm an expert. Like that meme on the internet, like, what am I an expert in today? So I'm way out of my area of expertise talking about, you know, ice making and the conditions that affect it. But I can tell you this, one of the big fights, I think you and I have talked about this before. One of the big fights that you see within organizations is the thermometer, because the general manager generally wants the arena to be cold because they want the ice to be good so the players can have and produce the best possible game that they can. Where levels above the general manager, and I would imagine that would include the team presidents, who are very much interested in ticket sales and making sure the paying customers don't have to wear jackets when they watch the game, would like it to be a little bit warmer and would like people to be comfortable coming to the rink. Thank you very much. So the thermometer fight is always one that I find really interesting between the general manager and the presidents. That's what I have to add to that conversation.
I like that. My favorite climate thing, of course, of all time was the opening and closing of the giant doors at the Meadowlands for football games and controlling the wind that way. Like you were the last airbender. You can control the wind inside the stadium to dictate how kicks are going to go. That's one of my favorite ones.
You know what I found interesting, too, is which global destination would you most like to see host NHL games? Now, there's a lot of Sweden comes in at number two. There's Switzerland at three. There's France at five. Oh, sorry. Switzerland comes in at four. France in at five. Number one, Italy. 11.95% of NHLPA players polled. International destination, Italy. Now, do you think that's just players saying to themselves, where do I want to go on vacation in Europe?
No, you have to climb into the mind of an NHL player. Where do you want to play most? And you have to also read the fine print on the poll. Do you know when this poll was conducted, Merrick?
Oh, no. When?
It was conducted in the first half of the season. What didn't happen until the second half of the season? The NHL committing to go to Italy for the Olympics. So Italy wins as the global destination you would most like to see host NHL games, because at that point, they didn't even know they were going to the Olympics yet. So they're all like, I'd like to go to Italy. That's where I want to go. And now they know for sure, which is
so
great.
So last year, so every year Elliot and I go to the NHL media tour in Europe. A couple of years ago, we were in Paris. Last year, we were in Stockholm. Oh, there we were, you know. And we always ask the players, like, where would you like to see this thing? And for whatever reason, last year, like, overwhelmingly, all the guys said Italy. It was like almost every, like, Swedes and Finns and Czech, all of them, Italy. Want to see this thing in Italy. Yeah. Because quite bluntly, that's where they wanted to go. And before it was, you know, we want to go to Paris and make, you know, Pierre-Edouard Belmar host us and take us around. But it just seemed like weird. Like last year, so many players just kept saying Italy, Italy, Italy. So when this NHLPA players poll pops up, I'm thinking like, on the one hand, that's kind of weird. But then I say to myself, well, everybody in Stockholm said we want to go to Italy.
Well let's think about
so maybe
this.
I shouldn't be too surprised at that.
Let's think about this logically. They all like wine. We know they all like wine. Wine is a preferred drink for these NHL
players. The older guys, for sure. The older guys like wine.
They all like lakes, frozen or otherwise. Mm. I mean, you know, at least got lakes. And they all carb load. They'll just house pasta before games. So, like, outside of ice is in Italy.
I thought you were going to say like they're all like super stylish now, and all they care about is like
that
what they're wearing coming to the games.
There's a bunch of F1 fans, so there's probably like a Ferrari thing going on too. Like, yeah, it all adds up to be like NHL players. You know, Italy is catnip to NHL players.
All right. If you need to win a face-off, who would you pick? Ryan O'Reilly first, 14.49%. Crosby second. Claude Giroux third, Luke Glendening. Good on him for getting votes here.
Oh, yeah.
At just under 6%. And Jordan Staal, who, by the way, will be making sulky noise this year, folks. 5.98% for Jordan Staal on the face-offs, Greg Wyshynski.
Yeah, he's going to be making sulky noise because he's going to be clapping his hands as Barkov wins it. I think that's about right. I think O'Reilly's the best face-off man in the league. That you know, the little stick and the tricks that he knows. I mean, the amount of players who have played with O'Reilly and told me that, you know, part of their joy in having him as a teammate was picking his brain on how to do that. I mean, he's clearly the, much like Barkov is the heir apparent to Bergeron and winning the Selke every year. Like O'Reilly is the heir apparent to Bergeron in the sense of like, I need this man to be my Obi-Wan Kenobi on face-offs and teach me how he does it.
I thought in all of this, like we had the, you know, the favorite rank, etc. What I would be curious about too is favorite places to live or favorite places to stay. And the other one that I'm always intrigued by, and I always love asking players this one, was there a team you always wanted to play for growing up? Or who did you want to play for growing up?
Yeah.
I remember having a conversation when we were working with Brad May here at Sportsnet. I remember asking him once, like, because Brad was around, like, he played for a lot of NHL teams. And I said, you know, was there one team that you wish you would have been able to play for? And he said, without a doubt, and I always wanted to growing up, I always, always wanted to play for the Boston Bruins. Mm. And, like, wish. You tell me you couldn't see Brad May playing for the Boston Bruins. Now, I know he scored one of the most iconic goals for the Buffalo Sabres in that organization against the Boston Bruins. But I could see Brad May have playing with the Boston Bruins. He said it came close once, but I think the money was light, so he ended up going somewhere else. But that, to me, would be an interesting question. Where would you like to play? Where did you want to play growing up?
I mean, how many Torontos are you going to get, though? Or maybe you don't. I don't know. Like, maybe that's the trick.
I don't know, but
I always think about a guy like Shattenkirk. Remember how badly Shattenkirk wanted to be a Ranger, and then it didn't necessarily work out for him as well as we thought it would? There's always that element of be careful what you wish for when you do get to play with your childhood team. Like for example, when, you know, you used to wear
Sheldon Surrey.
Or for example, like when you used to wear Surrey pajamas Edmonton. For that team, and then you become just like a blight on their salary cap as they have to sign their younger players.
I have no idea who you're talking about. I have no clue who you're talking about whatsoever. And that seems like a great way to end up. All right. Andrew Burnett's coming up on the other side.
Oh,
you have a thought
man.
On the Preds who clinched? I know. I love them.
Tell Bruno who's your boy. I got a lot of my bold predictions correct, more than I usually do before the season. But one of them was that Nashville would make the playoffs. I had my full faith in Brunette and Trotz and the vibe change there. And I picked them to make the cut. And lo and behold, here they are. What a fun team. What a fun story. Love the Preds making the cut.
It's a great team. It's a great city. It's a great organization at a whole bunch of different levels. And you know what? The thing about the Preds is they've always been this way. Like, since the Preds joined the NHL, like, honestly, who's had, you know, from our end, from the media point of view, who's had bad experiences with Nashville? No one.
I can tell you from a media point of view, there have been some bad experiences in Nashville. I've been privy to them. I've seen them firsthand.
Oh,
but
okay.
On the whole, maybe, I would say that most people have had a good
time. Outside of the arena, yes, but I'm talking about dealing with the organization. Oh yeah,
no, I believe I dragged. Sure. I definitely dragged this person by their ankles past the arena, I think, at one point. So
okay, I know you don't want to say who it was, but who does her name rhyme with?
I cannot say.
All right, Gogoshinsky, say hello to Arda as always. You be well. We'll talk soon.
It wasn't Arda, but yes, I shall. Take care.
Okay, very good. Greg Wyshynski from ESPN and The Drop commenting on, amongst other things, the NHLPA Players Poll, which you can read at nhlpa.com/player-poll.